This is Brennan and Bethany with Theralink Podcast. We believe that a strong therapist-parent connection is essential for therapy success. Join us each episode as we create a community that demystifies therapists and empowers parents.
Today, we're excited to have Kristen Turner join us. Kristen is an occupational therapist in the Effingham County School District in Georgia. She also has experience working with the adult population. I met Kristen in OT school at the Medical College of Georgia, where we graduated together in 2010. Let's get to the interview. Kristen, we are so glad that you are here. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the motor labs that you're doing in some of your classrooms. I know personally, one of my goals this year is to be more of a collaborator. And when I heard you talking about this last time we were hanging out, it's just stuck in my mind. So I want you to talk about the motor labs and mainly what they are and then get into kind of the why of it.
Okay, sure. So we call them motor labs because we choose really three different activities every week. And we have kind of a focus system of the month. So we start with coming up with what do we want to focus on this month. So maybe it was sensory experiences as far as tactile, just to kind of get started, or body awareness. And then we move on to more core strength or coordination or, heavy work, things like that. And so once we pick that for the month, then that helps us divide out the 4 weeks typically in the three activities. And so it's kind of three generic activities. So just for instance, today I did throwing a weighted ball, a wheelbarrow walk, and I've already forgotten the third one, but something with just some heavy work and some core work in it. And so I went into the classroom, and this was a self-contained classroom. And these are my students that are, I would say, are a little bit higher. They're like closer to third through fifth grade. And they've been doing this since they were in PSI with us, which is our preschool intervention program. And so I present those three activities and call them up one by one. And the teacher or the parent writes them down, or I write them on the board. I used to email them out, but it feels like just more in real time makes more sense because we can call it something different. So it makes sense to the teacher or the parent. So they do those three activities with me. And that's really part of my OT session, just to get started. But even if I'm in a classroom where there's kids that aren't getting OT services, they still participate because they're going to do these every single day until I come back. So the class I presented to on a Tuesday, they'll continue them until I come back the next Tuesday, and I'll present three more activities. We really need that repetition because once a week for 30 minutes isn't always that helpful. But as these kids do these every single week, then by the time I come back, we have a lot of good conversations with, hey, so-and-so, and he really struggled at first, or she really struggled at first, but now they're doing so much better with that activity. So it's just that increased exposure, and we work the body really as a whole system in order to get down to our smaller muscles, or okay, whatever it is that we're working on with the student.
One, are you recycling these all year long, or are you coming up with something new every week?
So by the end of the year, I'm starting to kind of revisit, especially my kids that can do a little bit more. But we really try, and we really try to make it different. And if I've done it already in the spring semester, I try not to do it again in the spring semester, but I might pull something from September and do it again towards the end of the year. Or sometimes if I'm kind of struggling, like, all right, it's teacher choice. So what are some things that y'all noticed during these motor activities in the past couple months that they really thrived in, enjoyed, or struggled in and needed more work? And then how do we modify that? Or what part of the activity do I pull out to work on to get better at the whole activity, if that makes sense? I kind of break it down and figure out what skill I need to work on.
I can see
to keep
this working in my containing classes tomorrow, but I want to take them to Gen Ed. Have you tried taking them to the gen ed classroom?
I have tried it in what I would call like our resource classroom. So those are our students just in a smaller class size, but they're still in general education standards. The hard part about that to me was, well, number one, lack of equipment. I run out of things to take around the school, especially some of my schools with a bigger caseload. And two is they just don't really have the time. They have so much to teach that it's really, I felt like it was unrealistic for me to expect a teacher to sit there and listen and follow through for a whole nother week. It turned into them kind of going over to their computer while I did the activities and then coming back, and then I'd show back up. And then also, I don't serve as many students in that classroom. So then I was spending a lot more time than I needed to. And I felt like my productivity was kind of being affected by that throughout the day. So, and every, you know, every self-contained class looks really, really different. So I have one class right now, who those kids present more with, like, kids with autism. And so we started the year off with, they come down to my therapy room in this particular school. We're doing really basic things. So learning to sit while you wait to jump on the big trampoline, or sit while you wait to swing. So we have these really big activities that they are really excited for, because they just have to learn the process. And so then by now, because we're, gosh, 4 or 5 weeks in now, I've faded out one of those activities and I've pushed in one that I want to use. So maybe now we're going to throw the weighted ball and then you'll get to go jump. And so I'll just kind of build upon those. And then by the end of the year, hopefully we're doing 2 to 3 activities that I want to do with them, letting them jump at the very end before they leave our room. So it just depends on the class, how I address the activities.
Do you have therapy swings in your school?
So in one of the classes that I have, that's where the bulk of my caseload is. I have a swing, a trampoline. I bought a really small ball pit, compression boat, things like that. But then, like, on Thursday mornings, I go to a school that I don't even have a space.
Yeah.
So I just do what I can. I found a small trampoline for those kiddos, cause they're really young, that has like a little attachment with a swing in it. Or sometimes we put them in a sheet and we swing back and forth with myself and the teacher. Just depends on, or we sit in a chair and we spin in the chair instead of spinning the swing. Like, I just have to use what I have.
I do all those things.
Kristen, I guess, so you've worked in hospital systems before as well too.
I have.
Can you talk a little bit about your access to resources within the hospital system versus in the school system, where you see the differences and where some additional benefits are?
Yes. Now, I will say that my hospital system was more with adults, but I had the experience in acute care where you just have what's in the room. And that's like when people are in the hospital just for, you know, anything that has happened in their life. And so at that point I switched to working on, you know, going to the restroom or stepping in and out the shower or standing at the sink. But even there's limitations because the showers are old. I can't get in there. The walker doesn't fit. The wheelchair doesn't fit. I can't do a transfer. And so you adapt and just make the best you can do. But I've also done the inpatient rehab setting, you know, where we had that luxury of picking what kind of shower we wanted to use or using the small apartment. And so those resources were a lot more available. In the school setting, I feel like, you know, I have to use what I have depending on what school I'm at, but I also have to make it functional because I know that my swing attachment isn't available all day long because I'm in there in and out with students. So the teacher can't just pop in and say, hey, so-and-so really needs a break. Well, that's awesome, but I'm also in the middle of a session. So, you know, everywhere you go, I feel like there's limitations and you just have to use what you've got in that setting because you're addressing something specific, and every setting is addressing something different.
So from an adaptability standpoint, it sounds like that is really important. In like adaptability on your behalf, like you have to be flexible and creative.
Dying to know your therapy tools, because we do the same job. So I'm dying to know, what are you hearing around? I already hear you talking about big things that I probably won't get, but are there other things that are in your toolbox every day?
I really use the basics. Like, I'm talking, and this is more fine motor, I guess, but construction paper, markers, glues, scissors, pencils. I have to have those things to make it throughout the day. And a little small pencil sharpener and some pencil grips. So I have like a little bag of tricks or my little fanny pack that I'll take sometimes. You know, I love the swing and I love all those things, but when I push into a classroom to help in a real time moment, like, I've just got to have what I have. And so I really couldn't live without the basics.
Are you someone who has like a go-to gripper for, you just go there first, or are you the one that has like 7 different ones and you're testing them out with each kid?
I'm which like one's yours? Stuck on one for right now. You know, I don't even know what it kind of looks like, a butterfly. And so you put the thumb and the pointer finger in there. Yes. And then I did have one with a loop where the middle finger goes underneath. But with the ones that I just ordered, don't have the loop. So we're just going to use that for now. But if I see that doesn't work, then I back up and punt.
The Grata gripper is kind of the tougher one. And the squishier one is the crossover. And that, yes, those are my favorite.
Yes. And I was hesitant at first. I was like, what is this? And so I just had to try it. And then I saw that I really, really do like those, because you can get any gripper under the sun. But I felt like those really do kind of go the route I want to go with the grasp for the most part.
So you mentioned earlier, communication with teachers and on occasion parents. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like, how often, and you know what that cadence might be?
Yeah. So the bulk of my communication, I would say like 90 to 95% is with the team inside the school. And most often that's the teacher. The only time I talk to a parent is in an IEP meeting, or if I see them at a special event, or if they email me, of course, I will definitely respond. I'm happy to chat, but I don't hear from people very often. And so when we have that IEP meeting once a year, or sometimes more than that, that's where I really just give the update for the whole year. Now I do, after every activity, like I'll write OT in the date. And if there's something awesome going on, like I wrote a long note of one last week, versus sometimes I'll just jot OT in the date and move on, or just say awesome work. So that's, I guess, where they see some of that feedback, is it just comes home. There's an activity typically in a writing prompt, or it could just be tracing lines, or maybe there's nothing at all, just depending on the student. But I really don't communicate very often with the families, because the bulk of what I do is support in the classroom. And so I have to know what's going on in the classroom to really be able to do my job, I feel like, in the school-based setting.
Yeah. Given that, what is a common misconception about therapists that you wish parents understood?
One of the things is, and I don't have this too often, but we do have to explain it, especially with some of our kiddos that we place initially, is the difference between the school-based therapy and the private sector. And my role in the school-based therapy is to support classroom goals. And so, you know, I'm asking the teacher, what's the struggle? Why did you ask me to come in? Okay, well, that's the goal, and that's what I need to support. Versus in the private sector, it would be, hey, what's going on at home? What can I help with? You know, and having those conversations with the parent. So that's a little bit of a misconception. I think they think as long as the doctor writes the script, then they get the service. But I really do look at function in the classroom.
Perfect. Can bring this one to like my personal experience. So I have a son with cerebral palsy, and I know that as a parent of a child with a lifelong disability, we tend to latch on to good therapists in our lives. When our time with them comes to an end, it's always a bit of a challenge. So tell me a little bit about what it's like for you as you start to develop a relationship with families, with patients. And what's that transition like when your time with that patient does come to an end?
So I'll kind of answer this question just based off my whole career, and then I'll bring it back to school-based, which is what I do now. The biggest relationships that I ever formed with patients was in inpatient therapy, because back then, I mean, it's surely different now with all the, you know, funding cuts and whatnot. But back then we'd spend 2 to 3 weeks with a family or a patient who didn't have a family. And so I knew a lot about them. You know, I can remember, you know, making salsa with somebody because their family brought in the tomatoes they were growing at home. There's still a family that I see around our community that, you know, every time we see each other, we give big hugs and we talk and we reminisce about, you know, the first shower he had after his accident and things like that. And so, you know, when they left, it was just so nice because we could talk about the growth that we had seen in that 2 week period. And with adults and families, you can kind of keep up in a sense, you know, you can, if you feel comfortable exchanging information and things like that, or they come back and visit in inpatient rehab, they did. So I feel like in the adult setting, that was really a bittersweet kind of moment. Like, you're so happy they're finally back to somewhat of a normal in regards to not sleeping in a hospital. Mm-hmm. In regards to working with our students, a lot of times it's such a gradual fade, I feel like, of services. You know, I may go from seeing them weekly or pulling them into the OT room weekly or sitting but right beside them weekly to then when I go in the classroom, they're still in there, but I don't have to pull them for the fine motor activity. To then they go to middle school and I might check in once a month. Then they're in high school and I'm, you know, back and away from that. So, you know, at this point, unless I go to a different school, of course, but then I can always check in and see how things are going. So it's so gradual for me in the school setting, and I'm such a small glimpse of their week, you know, with only 30 minutes or an hour being in the classroom or passing in the hallway, that I just feel like it naturally occurs. Like, I don't feel like it's abrupt. Of course, we're sad in May when we know our fifth graders are moving on and I'm not going to see them as much, but I just feel like, I hate to say a small role in their day, but really it's their teachers and the parapros and that spend so much time with them that I feel like it's so abrupt with, because I get that gradual fade. Mm-hmm.
Jumping back real quick, you mentioned funding cuts. What was that in reference to?
Well, I just feel like back in the day in inpatient rehab specifically, or even the nursing home or swing bed or home health, all these different areas I've worked in, I mean, we could see them for
hours,
2 or 3 weeks, especially a big injury, you know? Oh yeah. 2 45-minute sessions, an hour and a half. And so that was just the norm versus now I feel like then there's this push now to just justify getting them to rehab and then justify keeping them there or keeping them in the nursing home or keeping yourself in their home for home health.
Is this Medicare funding?
Everything too, because a lot of things follow Medicaid and Medicare. They kind of set the tone, then everybody else is going to follow suit because there's nothing any of us can do. Like that's our biggest source of payment.
Sure.
So that's kind of what I mean is it's really a lot more specific on the amount of time you see them, why you are seeing them, and then why do you need to keep seeing them? You know, what has taken you so long, basically?
I missed the good old days of being able to take 45-minute shower, makeup, curl their hair, and then go make the salsa and put it in jars and send it to people that were worried about them and say, I had a stroke, but look what I'm making, you know, those were really special therapy day.
Yes. And I mean, we've been out, 13 years. So to me, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but sadly it has changed a lot. Now, luckily I don't deal with the medical side of things as much anymore, but that is a huge barrier in the therapy world.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, from a timing perspective, is that something that you were seeing like pre-COVID, or is that something that's accelerated since the COVID era?
Yeah, I feel like it started right before that because I was still I worked in a small hospital. So we had inpatient, outpatient, swing bed and nursing home. And I did home health for that company. And so I felt like we started to notice those changes. And that was in 2017, 18-ish when I felt like the numbers, this was more in the nursing home, but your Part A Medicaid or Medicare patients, you would start to see that number decrease. Mm-hmm. Like closer to 45 minutes a day, whereas we used to get, like we were saying, an hour plus.
Yeah, which is interesting because it's almost antithetical in some ways to, you see a lot of states now that are increasing Medicaid, Medicare funding, I guess Medicare funding in particular, or expanding it. I shouldn't say expanding it, I guess maybe not increasing the funding, but like expanding those who are covered. So yeah, I wonder if... I'm just curious about maybe what the correlation is there, or, you know, if there is one.
And the other thing that you'll see happening is less use of your evaluating therapist, so your OTR or your PT, and more use of your assistant because they want the evaluating therapist doing all of the research, basically progress notes, research, evals, and discharges, keeping them busy with that. And then the assistant carrying out treatment, which is fine, but that's not really the model we went for. Yeah. I mean, I get that everything's a business, but that's not really what we were thinking when we signed up.
Yeah, so the people who are trained in really making that plan of care and evaluating are crammed with new people and new evals and aren't getting to see the process through. So,
and use their skill set the way they intended.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. So I know... that if you're in the classroom teaching these, I'm going back to the motor labs a little bit. If you're in the classroom, teaching these teachers, some of the stuff that they're just absorbing and they're learning from as you're in there. So I can see how these motor labs would be a huge resource for them just to be educated on what will help the kids learn. But what are some other resources that you are constantly sharing with teachers when you go visit and do consults?
I feel like a lot of what I do is help figure out how to modify or adapt or meet the student where they're at based on their needs and the needs that I address. I don't really share a ton of, you know, like games or activities, things like that, because they already have a lot of that stuff. I mean, I can, like, say if there's a middle school that needs to work on fasteners, like certainly I'll bring them a fastener board. But a lot of it is like troubleshooting. So they show me, hey, I mean, this is the work they're giving me. I'm like, well, have you tried, you know, highlight the bottom line, giving them a boundary? Do you see you have this big open wide space? Like, that doesn't make sense to them. You have to bring it back down, things like that. And they, the longer you work with the teacher, then your more seasoned teachers that are used to us being in the classroom, we don't have as many of those conversations because they've already tried those things. And from a technology standpoint, because I also serve on the assistive technology team in our district, is using the resources that are available to the students in our state that have special education mm-hmm. services, and that's free in the state of Georgia. It's called Read and Write. And so I pull what I want from that. So a newer student or younger student that's starting it, I don't want them to bother with the whole toolbar. Here's some voice typing. Use that when you're having a really difficult time, you know, spelling a word, or here, have it read back to you. So make sure it makes sense before you turn it in. And then by the time they get to middle and high school, hey, here's your whole toolbar. You know, this is how you can organize your work and, you know, look up things up in a dictionary that's built in and decrease some of these extra tabs and all these things when you're doing that work. So that's probably the most technology driven thing that I will suggest.
So you mentioned assistive technology. Do you have familiarity with AAC devices? Have you worked with those at all? What's your experience like on that front?
So, you know, obviously I'm not a speech therapist, but I have gone to the ATIA conference in Orlando for several years in a row. And there's a big, big push for AAC. There are a lot of big reps that sponsor the whole thing. And so it really has been eye-opening because, you know, maybe I'll sign up for one of the classes to go to or courses or whatever it is. And I realize I'm in there with a bunch of AAC, you know, learners that are trying to figure this out. I do say that, you know, when we're looking at any kind of communication system, a lot, you know, we always involve the speech therapist, mm-hmm. but I explained to the parents, you know, this could mean that we start with the picture system and work up to a system that has just one button that we've recorded our voice. And then we work all the way up to an actual, you know, iPad or tablet that has many options on it. But you really have to have the therapist buy in on the speech therapist side, and then the classroom has to buy in and make it accessible. If it's not accessible, then what are we doing other than wasting a lot of time and money? And just because we've tried it once or twice doesn't mean that we're out. Like, that's hard to learn. It's hard to learn to read, and it's hard to learn to write. So can you imagine? That's just as hard, because that is their means of communication, reading and writing and all those things. Maybe not for all of them, but for some of them, that is their means of communication. And it takes years and years of practice. And so, you know, a lot of what I learned too is, when everyone's doing an activity and say they're giving their answer, well, if their answer is a bunch of letters, that's their answer for the day. You know, maybe it's not the right answer, but neither is the person beside them who spoke the answer, you know, but that's still their answer. So maybe we should type that out for them and print it. And that's what goes on the board, because that's what, you know, that's what they wanted to tell us. Mm-hmm. So just kind of thinking outside the box with it. And even though it's not always perfect, it should still be accessible and it should be an option to that student.
All right, Kristen, what do you love about being a therapist?
My general thought is I love that I've worked in so many different settings, and I worked with adults and kids, and I have I feel like I have a lot of experiences with all of that. Maybe I'm not an expert in all of them, but at least I can say I've tried it. And, I really like people. So I love being able to communicate, like in the school setting, with all different teachers and kiddos and administrators in different schools. And every school has a personality versus, you know, in the hospital, then you go to different floors and you have different nurses and you make all these friends because you have to talk to so many people. And then, you know, when I was talking about spending 2 or 3 weeks with a family or going into a family's home, developing those relationships where, like I was talking about, seeing my former patient in the community. And like, we really are, I would say, like, not friends, but we're Facebook friends. And, you know, we really do have real life conversations. So I just love that, you know, you meet so many people and they really do, for the most part, value you and your time that you spent with them and anything that you contributed to their life, whether that be as a student or as a patient in rehab, an older patient.
We kind of talked a little bit earlier about just some of the challenges with like funding in the healthcare industry in general. What do you see as challenges with the healthcare industry as it relates to education?
You know, I really don't get into a lot of, if anything, in healthcare. The one thing that's going on right now, I feel like, are a lot of people are looking for more resources, whether that be more therapies, private therapies, and ABA therapies are a big push right now too. And these people are on wait lists, or you can't afford to go to your private therapist. And that is just such a huge barrier because, like I said, I speak so much to the staff. I don't get to talk to the family and know, like, what do you need at home? You know, occasionally in a meeting, if they tell me, I'm like, hey, I'll help you make a visual schedule if I have time. Mm-hmm. But like overall, like nobody can help them with that. And so what people I feel like need is more of like a coaching service, like the OT or PT or speech or whomever this person might be, even down to social work and, you know, who are just working with community resources. I mean, not direct service is what I meant by down to, but just to kind of coach them through, like, this is what I would do in this situation and just really have time to talk to somebody. Because even in the private sector, you know, you don't have time to talk about all the struggles at home and how you can troubleshoot through that. You have your 30-minute session and there's somebody in the waiting room waiting on you for their session. Like,
right.
And so I feel like there's just such a disconnect with what I did for 30 minutes and then what you need to do until you come back for the next 30-minute session in a week. Mm-hmm. Like that is just, it's just lacking, you know. Just more collaborative model would be really great if it was every other week or, you know, I saw we had, you know, from somebody coming from a different state and they went in 2 times a month for 45 minutes and spoke with that family. And they speak really highly of that, but that's not a service that we have. And that might've been an early intervention service, but it was helpful. So I just feel like if there could be more of a coaching service or, I don't know, just more time to really talk through stuff that's not always billable.
Yeah, that's definitely a big,
you know,
part of Brennan and mine of just empowering families to do the work at home. And it doesn't have to just happen at therapy. So yes, I totally agree with that. And that being said, what is an activity that all parents could do at home to help with their child's development, no matter who they are?
Okay. So without getting on my major soapbox, I will just say, if I would just really like to see from a very young age, like infancy, let's just say that, to put down the electronics and play with your kid. And I mean, I get that kids like to watch TV and things like that, but you know, way too much of that is going on and they have free access to things and we can't compete. I can't compete with a screen. I am not that exciting, but you know, for those students that don't, you know, obviously don't have it at school all day. Well, some do, but you know, they still enjoy those activities. So just with my kids and, you know, thank the Lord, my kids are neurotypical. So I can just say that this part is easy for me. And I realize that it's not easy for everybody else, but you can find a win in every activity. And like I was saying with AAC, like no matter what, you can find a win within what that child has done. So, I mean, we get out the recycle bin that's clean and they make whatever it is that day, or, you know, we get messy and there's stuff on my table and there's marks on my table and I don't care because they made something, they had an experience. And that's the other thing I was going to say is increase experiences. I know that experiences are really hard when some kids could be really difficult. I get that, but make the experience outside in your yard, like meet the kiddo where they are in an effort to do more hands-on activities. That is my major thing. And I know, you know, I like to see it from both sides. I get that me saying that it sounds really easy. And then there's somebody listening to this that their child is really struggling, but if they're down there lining up the cars and stacking the things, go stack something with them, make your line, like just be in the area and acknowledge, you know, cause maybe they're not communicating with you, but that's their form of play. So let's just meet them where they are and that be the win for the day. And I'm not saying you have to do it for an hour, but a little bit, you know, instead of putting a screen in front of them. So
yes. And I think, I can probably piggyback on that to some degree, but also play devil's advocate in some ways because I have so as I mentioned, my son, CP, 6 years old, he is in a wheelchair, nonverbal, uses an AAC device. It's an eye gaze device. And actually one of the things that he controls really well independently is an iPad. And that is, you know, his happy place when he's in front of his iPad. So we do, to your point, I mean, there is a limit to it. But we've actually found that it's been a really good educational tool for him as well. Even though he's nonverbal, funny thing is he's trying to become bilingual. So like he really developed a love for Spanish. Yeah. And So we actually have a Spanish tutor that works with him, and he's gotten really into like Google Translate, and will have his device speak in English and then translate in Spanish, and then he'll try to write in Spanish and then have it translate back. So it's been pretty fun to watch and just, you know, be a part of it with them. But you know, it, like any parent, you know, I want to limit screen time, and I've certainly witnessed the typical parent behaviors of when it's time to take the iPad away and it's a meltdown.
But I do feel like that's where I, like I said, try to see it from both sides. Like,
yep,
that's what everyone should do, but that's not feasible for everyone.
Sure.
Everyone's life is not the same. So I have to get over it. Like, people are going to use technology and it's great. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, I guess that was kind of my point, but I understand things like you're saying, like, yep, that's his happy place. And you just have to like survive at some point, and he's learning. So there's your win. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, from an accessibility standpoint and, you know, just gaining experiences outside the home, like that's something too that we've really, really pushed. And I 100% agree on that. I mean, we'll try to get him out to museums. He loves art, geography, all that stuff. I will say, you know, having a child in a wheelchair, it can be difficult at times finding places that are accessible. You know, even as simple, as simple as going on hikes, you know, finding paved paths, can be a challenge. So we do have to do some research in advance, just to make sure that we've kind of got our bearings mapped out. You know, I think I would love to see a world where, you know, everything is, you know, more accessible for folks like him. But yeah, I think we're getting there. I think there is improvement. It's, but it just takes a lot of advocacy and more people speaking up and bringing it to the forefront. I think there's a lot of, you know, there's not enough representation just in general for children like him. And I think that the more that we can make kids like him visible to the general public, the better.
Yeah. And I was going to say too, like, that's, you know, kind of where us as therapists have to realize that it's not always easy. Like, just want to go on a hike with your family is just not easy. You know, sure, what I mean? Mm-hmm. So working together on that, and how can we kind of meet Congress in the middle and come up with some better plans across the board and in any accessibility, whether that's school, school to leisure, you know?
Kristen, thank you so much for talking to us about school therapy. I'm excited to go do some motor labs.
And I should say that I use those, you know, when I pull a student in, I still pull from those activities.
Yes, I'm going to probably ask for some pictures and things so we can kind of post it on our website for people to see. But yeah, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Kristen.
Do you have questions for our guests? Send your questions to info@theralink.com. You can also find us at our website at theralink.com and on our socials with the handle @theralink.